Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
Fans, and welcome to the Bird Calls, the podcast dedicated to SB Nation's TheBirdRights.com. I'm your host, Preston Ells, and today we are talking training camp, Tony Allen, the Pelicans' regular season, even next offseason, and more with Jamile Dunn. What is going on, Jamile?
What's going on, Preston? Glad to be back. You know, the first one was a lot of fun, so looking forward to it again.
Yeah, you were great for a quote, a wonderful and unpredictable interview. So I'm very excited to see what's going to happen on this podcast. And we are also bringing back Trevor Ritchie. You didn't go far, did you?
Round two, man. I told you, I'm ready for game seven.
I hope you still got some left in you. Glad to have both of you guys back. Jamile.
I'm Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. We help men deal with the life changes triggered by divorce, such as child custody and property division, among many others. But life changes also occur after divorce. These changes can make parts of your existing court order irrelevant or harder to follow. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell. We're a partner men can count on.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
Last time we spoke was immediately after Jrue Holiday's press conference. But before we travel back in time, I want to remind listeners to follow Jamile at JamDunn06. Is that still your handle?
That's it.
Cool. Trevor, what's yours?
Richie TMR. Please follow.
There it is. And if you like what you're hearing, please do us a favor, share, retweet, and rate. Please, please rate. Each individual rating helps to attract attention to the pod and get more listeners. And also, if you have any questions, we just did our first pod mailbag. Please at me at Preston Ellis or email PrestonEllis@gmail.com. Tomorrow morning, we're going to post our first mailbag with Travis and Trevor, as I just mentioned. And coming up next week, we are previewing the Southwestern Conference with four representatives from each team represented by ESPN and SB Nation. So that's going to be pretty cool. But now we are back with Jamile. And this podcast is pretty much all about Jamile because he and I reached out to each other and I found out that not only is he optimistic about this season, but he's so far ahead of us. He's about 365 days in the future trying to plan on how the Pelicans are going to take the next step from here. So just take the platform. Where do you see the Pelicans finishing with this roster that's just added Rajon Rondo, Ian Clark, Tony Allen, and Darius Miller? And what's the future hold for the New Orleans Pelicans?
Man, after you built it up like that, now I have to like walk it back a little bit. No, like I am optimistic about the season. I would say that I'm not necessarily saying that I'm optimistic going forward. I mean, because we don't know what they're going to do, and quite frankly, whether they go to the playoffs or not, we're not even sure who's going to be calling the shots at that point, right? Which is the big frustration with this franchise always is you just kind of never know who's in control. But I am optimistic about this year. And what I, you know, was talking to you about, Preston, was just that a lot of the conversation has focused about around what happens to this team if they struggle, right? You know, do you have to trade Boogie or think about moving Davis eventually or just restart or something. But nobody's talked about, well, what happens if the team actually does well, right? Which, you know, is in the realm of possibilities, right? If we play this over 100 times, there's going to be some, you know, so many times that it actually turns out really well. And so what happens if they do, you know, hit lightning in a bottle and win, who knows, 54 games or something like that and get a 3 or 4 seed in the West? And maybe get to the second round of the playoffs, right? So where do you go from there? Because something that you have brought up in previous podcasts, Preston, is, you know, that you don't really get a feel for the real direction of the team, right? Right. You look at other franchises, the ones that do it well, right? Like San Antonio, who's done it, you know, with different players over 20 years. There always seems to be a plan of when a guy comes in, he's got a certain skill set and we're going to put him in a spot to succeed. Here, it just kind of seems like they throw some stuff at the wall. But you know, going forward into the offseason, in a hypothetical world where they do have a great season, you know, I think they face some serious challenges. And like you were saying, they're going to lose Jordan Crawford. They're going to lose Ian Clark, likely, is going to seek a better contract. Even guys Tony Allen, who they just signed, they're going to lose all those guys. Now, I suspect that you're going to be able to bring some of them back, like Rondo. I just don't think even if he has a great season, there's not going to be a huge market for Rondo. Like, how many teams does Rondo really fit, right? How many teams have a coach that wants to deal with Rondo? How many teams have, you know, the requisite talent around him to make it work, right? And then this is also a league with lots of guards. So, you know, there's an excess of guards anyway. So I actually think at his age and with his sort of baggage and just general uniqueness of his play, I think you'll be able to bring Rondo back at a decent rate. Say, you know, 2 years, $14 million or something like that. So I don't see that as an issue. I think Ian Clark, with, you know, all the gravity that Davis and Cousins are going to have, Ian Clark is going to get wide open shots. Everybody's going to get wide open shots. It's just about whether they can knock them down, which is really, you know, kind of been the story since Davis has been there, right? He creates a lot of openings for people, and, you know, you just see guys clank it from the corner all the time. So Ian Clark will be a guy who's hard to bring back, but I do think they have some flexibility when you talk about someone like Omer Asik. I think next offseason, he's absolutely going to be gone, especially if the Pels have any kind of new management. But even if Dell is here, I think at that point, he will have been useless to the team for almost 3 seasons, really 2.5. And so they'll stretch him, and it'll be much more friendly to the team next year than it was this year. And then they can also get rid of Gentle, who will only have 1 year left on his deal, and they'll probably have to do something similar to what they did for Poindexter. So that creates, you know, that could give them an extra $12 million. They're still not going to have a ton to play with, but we know that if you are a contender, you can get deals. Maybe not, you're not going to get a deal from LeBron James or anything, but you can get deals from some of the marginal players. And I hate to use Nick Young because I didn't actually want him on the team, but a guy like Nick Young, when he has to choose between the Pels and Golden State, you know, even if he's getting more minutes with the Pels, like with Golden State, he's got an opportunity to win. So the Pels could benefit from that if you have, you know, coming off of a really great season like that. So I think they could go out and maybe explore the trade market. You're not going to get much with the amount of cap space that they'll be able to create next offseason, especially after dumping Cousins. Oh, not dumping Cousins. Sorry. Hopefully that's not a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
But after re-signing Cousins is what I meant. You're not going to have a ton of space, right? So even the little space you can create with dumping Asik and Agenza, you're going to basically eat most of that with the extension for Cousins. So, you know, it's going to be the trade market. It's going to be guys on, you know, lower end deals and exception type guys. But I think you could, you know, possibly get certain guys. And, you know, I'm not you know, I could name some names, but it's so far out, you know, when you're talking about a whole year. But I just think the premium has to be on smart guys. I liked the Ian Clark signing only because, well, one, he can transition quickly, something that we've seen Pelican or players struggle with, right, coming in to play with the Pels or, you know, the old Hornets. Like, they come in and, you know, it's like anything, right? You're playing with new players in a new system. You know, Ian Clark is, you know, familiar with Gentry's system, so he's going to be able to come in and mesh quickly. Tony Allen, you know, he's sort of a designated defender, and I really like that signing because one of the problems I have with some of the guys that Pels will sign, some of the marginal guys, I mean, is that you'll find guys who aren't really good at anything, right? They're okay defenders, they're okay shooters, they're okay rebounders, but they don't do anything well. At least Tony Allen has a real skill. Yeah, he can't, you know, he can't shoot to save his life, but, you know, he can defend people, he can do some different things, and you can work around his shooting in spots, although that's ultimately going to be a limitation for him. So, you know, I think the team is in good position going into the season, but then there's always that lingering. I try to stay positive, Preston. I try to feed off your positive energy, but the Pels always seem to have something happen. And, you know, just when you try to get really optimistic, something like, you know, Solomon Hill happens where just out of the blue, he injured his hamstring and is out for basically the whole season. And, you know, who knows? He was one of those guys, one of those X-factor guys who I felt like, you know, if Solomon Hill all of a sudden started hitting, you know, 39% of his threes and, you know, 41% from the corners or something like that, you know, if he started to give them anything at all or learning how to cut off the ball, that could have been really, you know, he could have turned into the player who they actually, who I guess Dell thought he was signing. But, you know, instead he injured his hamstring and we're going to have to wonder about him. And Frank Jackson, who, that's not as big a deal because I don't think he was really going to contribute this year anyway. He was probably just going to be in the D League, but, you know, that was also discouraging. So, you know, with the Pels, everything has to be sort of couched in the reality that seems to be, you know, the reality that seems to be this team, just something negative always happening. Right.
Jamal, you're sinking fast. You're sinking fast, buddy. We need you to bring the positivity back.
I am positive, but I'm just saying like as soon as you get that that positive mindset about it, something like that happens and now they have to reshuffle everything, right? A team that already was kind of gluing it together. But with all that said, I think for this season they're going to be fine. I do think they will miss Solomon Hill, just having someone who actually fits in that position instead of trying to, you know, miscast all these different guys like Tony Allen or I think Darius Miller has a shot to actually be decent there, but we'll have to see. But I think they'll be fine without Solomon Hill. He's not that big of a difference maker. And I think they'll have a good season. Now, I have to ask you guys, do you trust Dell Demps next season? Because I could see a situation where they make the playoffs and, you know, Dell is still let go.
And this is something that I'm going to throw to you. But before I do, Trevor, we've all been watching the New Orleans Saints as well, and they've come out to an ugly 0-2 start.
No, we have not. We have not all been watching.
Oh, we haven't. We haven't all been watching. For those of us who have been watching and relate this to President Mickey Loomis of the New Orleans Saints and also Vice President of the New Orleans Pelicans, this is a scenario that could get interesting really quickly, because should the Saints come out to like a 3-13 season, Mickey Loomis is so entrenched in the workings of Tom Benson, you'd have to believe there's no scenario in which he is no longer the general manager of the New Orleans Saints. But should that happen, and should the Pelicans part ways with Mickey Loomis, this might not tie into how the Pelicans perform at all. We might lose Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry just based on there's a new boss in town. But with that being said, I've been out on Dell Demps since before the season, even should the Pelicans finish with a 6 seed, which I think that they will this season. I think they definitely have the potential to at least climb to a 7 seed. I think under those circumstances, Dale Demps still doesn't belong in New Orleans after 7 years, but he's done a lot of hard work this offseason. And Trevor, it is according to us, going to come to fruition. So what is your thoughts on this offseason and making it work? And where do you think the Pelicans end at the 2017-18 season? Do you think Dale Demps and Alvin Gentry are still among us at that point in time?
I hope they're still among us, because in the hope that they're still among us, that means that everything was a success. I disagree with Jamil when he said that Solomon Hill isn't that big of a difference maker. Now, I get what he meant by that, but for the roster that we have right now, it's an extremely big hit. And do I think they can still make it work? Of course, I think something can happen. And like I said, if they're still among us at the end of the season, then that means everything worked. But I think this is one of the scenarios. It's like one of the movies that you get that is advertised as multiple endings, and you think it's going to be two or three, and it's like seven or eight. And that's what we're looking at. If the season is a miss come the All-Star break, it's we could lose Boogie. Who knows with the AD rumors? I don't know what could happen there. I sure as heck hope nothing happens there. But there's so many different things that could happen. If Solomon Hill comes back, I don't know what his time frame. I know it's most of the season. I don't know the exact time frame, but there's no definite answer to that question, because there's so many different possibilities, and I don't know where the perspective is on other teams, and if that's just the everywhere thing or if it's just New Orleans. I'm sure it's just New Orleans. But there's just so much that can happen. I don't think I'll go with this. I definitely don't think Alvin Gentry will be with us if we miss the playoffs. I'm going to go with a little bit, maybe a hot take and maybe an unpopular opinion, but I think Alvin Gentry would go before Dale Demps does.
All right. Well, I can sign on to that, but I think they're a package deal right now. They're attached to the hip. Whatever happens to one of them happens to both of them. It might not necessarily happen at the exact same time. Let's say if we get to All-Star break and Mickey Loomis gives Dale Demps the benefit of the doubt to finish out the season, but does remove Alvin Gentry, thereby putting either Darren Erman or Chris Finch in charge of the rest of the Pelicans roster. You'd have to assume it'd be Darren Erman, but we're not talking about that right now. Right now, we're talking about possibilities, and we're talking about optimism, because right now we do have a team full of guys attending voluntary workouts, training together, saying all the right things, in phenomenal shape. These guys look like they're really ready to take the next step in their careers for some of the younger guys. And some of the older guys kind of resurrect a bit of their lost image, like Tony Allen as the guy on the decline, still on the second all-defensive NBA team last season. Rajon Rondo has kind of fallen apart at the seams after stops in Dallas and Chicago and Sacramento. But last year, we saw a glimpse of what he could be in just two games against the Chicago Bulls. But we're hanging on to that hope. Jamil, let's talk about some of our lineups right now with this mismatch of players we've got. For me, obviously, we've all got, you know, some version of Rondo, Jrue Holiday, either Etuan Moore, Darius Miller at the three, and then AD and Boogie. But the second lineups and third lineups get a bit more interesting. I've got Jrue Holiday, Darius Miller, Ian Clark, and DeMarcus Cousins. Is that even five people? I don't even know. My brain's left me. And then Rajon Rondo in the third unit with Jordan Crawford, Etuan Moore, Anthony Davis, and Cheick Diallo. And why this is important is I really like the Rondo AD pairing, because AD moves off the ball a bit better than Boogie does. But with Jrue Holiday, Boogie can share a bit more of that responsibility in that playmaking mode. How do you see these lineups working, and what guys do you hope get paired together in these lineups?
Well, I think you're going to see a ton of three guard lineups this year. And the reason being, and the reason I think this is because, one, rebounding isn't going to be an issue for them. They've got DeMarcus, they've got AD, and also, you know, even Rondo is a decent rebounder, you know, for his position. So I think, and also they just have a dearth of small forwards, right? They just don't have anybody. And, you know, in some games you're going to really need somebody, like if you're playing LeBron or if you're playing Golden State or something like that. But most teams don't have a super dynamic small forward, right? It's like the most rare position in the league to have someone like a LeBron or a Paul George or something like that. So on most nights, it's not going to be that big of a deal to run three guard lineups, and it'll probably cause more issues for the other team than it will for the Pelicans playing a little bit small. So I think some of the lineups I'm interested in seeing are Ian Clark, Drew, and Rondo together with, say, maybe Boogie and Dante. Well, hopefully Dante Cunningham, if they bring him back. I'd even be interested to see like a Drew Holiday, Tony Allen, Rondo, AD, and Boogie lineup, right? Which wouldn't be that wouldn't be your starting lineup or anything like that, but just one of those little alternate lineups you could throw in there.
I don't think it would be a stretch for a starting lineup. I definitely don't. I don't think it might not be a every game starting lineup, but what you just said, I don't see it as a stretch that could be the starting lineup every once in a while. I wouldn't be surprised one bit.
Yeah. Against certain teams, I think it could really work. And I think, and this is going to be sort of, and I think this is really where the Pels season could take a turn for the sort of unpredictable in a positive way. Is AD, we all know that he's a really good shooter, right? You in the spots that he's comfortable in, right? In the little mid-range area. And he seems to improve in that area every year. And he's got the form to go out to three. Cousins was a pretty good three-point shooter, especially for a big last year. And if he improves on that, you know, it looks on the face of it like the lineup doesn't have enough shooting if you have Rondo, Allen and Holiday on the court, which I know Holiday can shoot, but we, you know, he's not like a dead eye shooter like we might prefer to have on the court. Although, you know, he's had his moments, but you could do a lot of weird in and out things. Like I really want to see like some, you know, pick and rolls and pick and pops with Boogie and AD. There's lots of different stuff. Like, they could run that little doors play like Monty used to run to get Ryan Anderson open all the time at the top of the key. And so there's different things you can do if guys are moving around. And I think Tony Allen, you know, he's not the best cutter in the world. He understands, you know, where to go. He's a veteran guy. And of course, Rondo, being a really smart player, understands how to move without the ball. And so if you're running things, I think those lineups, you would want to run a lot of things through Cousins, maybe at the top of the key, or maybe even at the top of the arc, depending on where everybody's at, because people can move around, and he's still a threat to shoot. He's dragging a big out of the paint, which opens things up for AD, as well as, you know, cutting lanes for other people. So, you know, lineups like that where it kind of looks like a – and, of course, that lineup defensively has the potential to be really, really strong with Allen and Holiday especially. And, you know, I think Rondo's smart enough to play within a team defense. I don't know that he's as tenacious as maybe he was in his old Boston days, but if he can give us anything, you know, approaching that, they have an opportunity in certain stretches to run a really hellacious defensive lineup with, I think, some surprising upside. I mean, they have a chance, I think, to be a better version of Memphis. Now, the only caveat is, can they be as smart as Memphis was? Because I think that was the basketball IQ of the top line players in Memphis, especially when you talk about Gasol, Conley, and from a defensive perspective, Tony Allen. That was really what drove that team, right? And so we have one of those cogs, and we'll see if Gentry and his staff can utilize it.
You know what, Trevor, and to your perspective on some of these rotations, stuff that we're interested to see. Obviously, like one rotation would be Rajon Rondo essentially quarterbacking a group of shooters like Ian Clark and Jordan Crawford on the wing could be something exciting. What are some rotations you're excited to see? Trevor, did we lose you?
Are we good? We good?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Okay. Go ahead.
Great. I think one of the things I'm most excited for is going to be throwing that Tony Allen in the three spot. I'm just a big I love Tony Allen. He's been one of my favorite players since I was a kid, just from a defensive standpoint, obviously. And I think also you hit exactly what I would have said. The Rondo, Ian Clark, Jordan Crawford, AD. And then, you know, I'm just going to throw in a jinx because I like him. But I think that would be all. I think that was. Dang, why? All right, timeout. We're calling timeout, game 7, fourth quarter. Jamil, what is up with the jinxer, man?
What do you mean, what is up with him?
What's the hate? Where's the hate coming from?
Jamal, Trevor is defending his boy as per their Twitter conversation. Last night, somebody was hating on Ajinsa for not attending the voluntary workouts, and Trevor mentioned him, and Ajinsa actually reached out to our very own Trevor Ritchie to let him know that his wife is 9 months pregnant right now, I believe, and they have a two-year-old.
Always an excuse.
All right, but back to what you said. No, I mean Rondo being able to pass and spread the court to, and even if it's just for a few minutes a game to give some of those role players and some of those shooters some confidence when it comes back to the thick of things, and we need them to hit big shots at times because we're going to need Jordan Crawford to stay consistent, and hopefully we get the same pace that we got from him last year. We hope that we can expand on what Ian Clark has already done. So I think what you already stated as a lineup is probably those are two of the more exciting things to see. I think if we're just going to go up, like I said, throwing Tony Allen in there, I think the rotation at that three with the loss of Solomon Hill is just an interesting spot. I mean, we know next to nothing about Darius Miller, and who knows that he can't come in and provide a spark like Jordan Crawford did last year, or among some other people, or maybe step into that role if we can't get Dante Cunningham back and be something similar to that. So I think it's already an interesting enough lineup when it comes to the starting lineup, and then being able to implement some of the few shooters that we have on the roster. But that just waiting for the explosion at that three spot, whoever that may be, into the starting lineup will be the exciting thing to see this season.
Jamal, go ahead.
Well, one thing I am optimistic about, and I haven't talked too much about it because I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I actually am really optimistic about Darius Miller. And I think, and I'm not saying he's going to be a star or anything. He has some limitations. But I think he really does seem like he has become comfortable as a shooter and a little bit more comfortable as a ball handler. Just looking at, you know, a lot of his games in his European team that he came over from, you know, I was pretty impressed. You know, and I don't expect him to perform in that role that he had on that team with the Pels. Obviously, is going to be much more limited. But I think he can provide some spacing and maybe even move off the ball or just give us the one dribble that we always wanted Solomon Hill to be able to give us, right? The one sort of dribble drive to the basket and make the right pass, right? But the other thing about this team is, and I don't know, and this is the thing about Del Demps, like, sometimes it's always nice to have a GM where when something happens, when you see a theme in the kind of players they're bringing in, you know that it's a sort of coherent choice that they're making to bring a certain kind of player in. And I guess Demps did have that at one time with the young veteran thing, right? That was always his thing. I guess it kind of still was, right? Bringing in a guy like Cousins, right? Following up on Holiday a few years ago. So, but with this current offseason, the thing I like about the guys they brought in, they're all from winning cultures, right? When you look at Rondo, I know he hasn't necessarily won in a while, but I mean, you know, who's won more than him on this roster, right? He's won a title, which is more than basically everybody else on this roster in terms of winning big games. And he's been in that environment and understands what it takes, at least. Let's hope he can just keep his head on and, you know, get along with everybody. Ian Clark obviously was with Golden State. I don't want to, you know, it's too easy to say, oh, a guy was with this good team and therefore he's a winner, you know, and he's going to bring that to us. I think that's lazy. But I also think that those teams that win consistently and bring it consistently, there's a thing to that, right? There's something that obviously the Pels haven't had, right? Where we see them come out certain nights and, you know, they have energy. It doesn't matter whether the shots are going in or not. But they have energy, they're hustling, they're getting to all their spots. And then you have other nights where, and I know it's a long season, so every team's going to have sluggish nights, but those really good teams tend to have a lot less sluggish nights, and they understand their assignments, understand that sort of professional side of the game to bring that mental aspect every night, even if maybe physically you're worn down. And then Tony Allen, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, one of the more successful teams over the past decade with the Grizzlies, you know, yeah, Marc Gasol and Conley were the most talented players on the team. But Tony Allen was the identity of that team. And that team is a lot different if he's not on it, right? And they don't win as much. So this is a guy who really can have an impact for you, but just in a unique way. And you need a, and this is where we kind of get into trouble, but hopefully with Ermine and Finch, we can work it out. You need a good coach to manage the role that he's in, who he's on the court with, because there are serious limitations there, but there's also serious, serious benefits to Tony Allen if you use him the right way.
Yeah, and that was one of the two things that they sought to upgrade this offseason. One was the shooting, which they didn't ever really get to. But the second one was the overall IQ of the team. And they did a wonderful job of that. You mentioned, of course, Tony Allen, Rajon Rondo, but also Ian Clark, not just being with the Golden State Warriors, but also Steve Kerr called him his favorite player to coach. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, but I just want to assume that he's a hardworking guy who's going to improve every single year that he's in the league. To go back to what you were saying about Darius Miller and entrusting him with three position that he's going to play well, even if he does, Jamile, and I'm going to send this to Trevor, there's nobody behind him. Not only is he going to have to play well, he's going to have to play conceivably 48 minutes a game unless Etuan Moore is there to spell him at times. And we also are hoping that he can give us some minutes at the four. Otherwise, you're going to have to give all those minutes to Diallo and Ejinsa. So, Trevor, I'm going to throw it to you. Today, Brett Martell announced that we've given non-guaranteed contracts to Martell Webster and to Perry Jones. That coinciding, Woo! I know, with Chase Buttinger and Josh Smith, who visited us, and we have Jalen Jones and Charles Cook to two-way contracts. So, Trevor, I'm going to start with you. What is the holdup with this backup 3-4 spot, and who's ever going to do it?
Man, I don't even think I think they're so it's tunnel vision right now to just filling a 3 spot. There doesn't seem to be much understanding other than we're reaching at optimism right now. If I'm being honest, we as Pelicans fans, we just want the optimism because we don't really have much to look to for it. I mean, we do now when you talk about Cousins, but like he said, it's just every time that happens, something else happens to negate it or cancel it out. So I don't even know. I mean, if you get excited about the training camp contracts and you're just hoping that somebody comes out of nowhere to fill that role for us, then great, unless we find somehow to get Dante back. I don't know as far as if we're talking about stretch four, we really don't have an option other than Dante if there's any possible way that can happen. So I don't even think that's a thought process, like I said in the last podcast, because most of our options have already been thought out and tried and attempted. And at this point, we're reaching in the front office for players and we're reaching as a fandom for optimism.
Jamile, we've
Damn.
Seen. Yeah. Expound on this.
We hit it perfectly.
Yeah. Also mention the fact that we've already lost Boris Diaw, Terrence Jones, and Donatas Mata-Yunas to foreign NBA careers, although Boris Diaw has in his contract that he can return to the NBA. But are you surprised that the Pelicans haven't targeted these guys? And Jamile, what is the holdup, you think, with Dante Cunningham? We've had some guys talk about him wanting a second year, but it seems as if nobody's willing to give it to him. So do you think it's just resentment towards the Pelicans franchise, or do you think the Pelicans aren't offering it to him?
I don't see why he would... And obviously, I don't know his real behind-the-scenes situation with the team, but outside looking in, I can't see any reason why he would have any resentment towards the Pels, right? What are they supposed to do, max you out? Like, you know, they gave him a contract, and I know people have mentioned this before, but they gave him a contract when no one else would, and they developed him as a player, you know, into a guy who seems like he might be a decent role player, you know, for this team especially, but maybe even for, you know, Minnesota potentially. But so I don't think it's necessarily an emotional thing, which would then bring you down to a business aspect. And from that end, on court, it would seem to be a slam dunk, right? You get more minutes. You're going to play probably some 3 and 4. Who knows, with the Pels, you're probably end up playing all 5 positions, you know? So I don't see, and in Minnesota especially, I don't see many minutes for him. There's certainly not very many minutes for him in the front court. And, you know, with Jimmy Butler there, there's not very many minutes at 3, especially with, you know, also having Wiggins. It's just, there's no playing time for him, really. So, yeah, it's a weird thing. I think maybe he and his agent may have set a date. You know, after free agency gets past a certain point, you know, it's kind of your options are your options, right? It's not a ton of negotiating going on, really. So maybe they just said, okay, well, we'll wait until the last minute because maybe another team swoops in and, you know, who knows, right? Right? A team could have a Solomon Hill issue with their own player, right? He's working out and rips his hamstring up, and all of a sudden they're willing to give Dante a second year guarantee or maybe a little bit more money to come to their team, right? So it makes sense for him. I could see that he and his agent may have circled a date and said, well, at this point, this is what we're going to get regardless, so we might as well wait until X date because anything can happen and we might be able to parlay that into something better. So that's the only real reason I can think of why this deal hasn't happened yet.
You don't see any room for resentment on behalf of Dante Cunningham?
No, for what? Why would he resent the team?
The only I wouldn't say team. I just think that I can see the window for a little frustration when it comes to I don't have the numbers pulled up in front of me, but if I'm not mistaken, for a couple of years he's been the player to stay healthy and play the most games out of anyone else on the team. He's probably for what he's paid and what he's worth and what you expect out of him, probably the most consistent player we've had in a while, bar AD. And you know, injuries there have happened as well. I don't know. Maybe it's an issue where he sees the money thrown out to other players across the league, and it's just kind of like, man, you know, I want to come back, but am I getting what I want? But then it goes back to what you already said, where it comes a certain point in free agency where your options are your options, and you don't really have a choice. But I all I'm saying is I could see where there's a little room for frustration. Would I say resentment? I don't think so. I don't think he has room for that. But a little frustration when it comes to his agent and the team and negotiations, maybe so. I'm just saying that I see the window for possibility there.
I think we can all agree that he should have just taken the player option. And now he's at a point where I could foresee his agent telling him to wait because teams like Cleveland, Boston could experience an injury at some point in the season. And that could be a perfect opportunity for Dante Cunningham to play for a contender and earn some of that money you were just talking about. Jamal, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, what'll be real frustrating is if you go to Minnesota and get 6 minutes a night, and then you hit back in free agency next year with an even lower offer, like that'll be really frustrating. So, I think your point is fair that there could be some, you know, he could have been expecting more, but at the same time, you know, this is the professional sports, right? Guys are forced, you know, with a lot of pride are forced to play for a lot less. So, you know, for Dante Cunningham, who, yeah, you're right. He has been at least the guy to show up most nights, right? And there's some value to that, definitely. But at the end of the day, you know, he's not, I mean, for this team, he's definitely a difference maker, but he's in terms of the scheme of the grand scheme of the league, even when you're looking at role players, I don't think Dante Cunningham is necessarily that big of a deal. I mean, the fact that the Pelicans are so thin is what makes him a big deal for us. But as you can see that since he's out there right now, most teams aren't really concerned with him. So, from his perspective, I think you take the deal with the Pels because you're going to get the minutes, hit free agency again next year and see what you can do.
He's played in 66 games or more in all three of his seasons. His shooting has gone up from 3-point range. It was at 10%, although at a very low volume of shooting, went to 31.5% last year. And 39% this most recent year, above 39%. So he's been working on his game really hard with our friend Jamal McMillan, and we do hope to have him back because God knows we need him right now. Before I let you guys go, let's talk training camp. We're a week away from media day. What is your main takeaway from training camp? If we fast forward into the future 3 weeks from now, Jamal, what do you hope people are saying coming out of watching training camp workouts?
Everybody's healthy. like no matter what happens in training camp, you know, yes, we all want them to gel. Yes, we all want it to work offensively, defensively, all that great stuff. But if we get to game one, you know, out of training camp and to game one, and we can say everybody who's currently on the roster, who we expect to get big minutes, is completely healthy and ready to go, no question marks, no, you know, any of that stuff, I'll be happy coming out of training camp.
Trevor, what about you?
I think every Pelicans fan relates to what was just said. I mean, yeah. We just want – I mean, that's all we want for the season. I mean, if all of our players are healthy and we run the best system we can under the front office and the coaching staff that we have, and like I said, everyone's healthy, there will be some disappointment if we were to miss the playoffs. Now, with the Solomon Hill issue, that's already not the case. I'm just saying hypothetically. That's the only thing we've wanted for years now, is for everyone to just play a season out healthy and find out what – and that doesn't happen for necessarily any NBA team, but just especially for us, that's what we wish to see, how it would play out with what we've already put together at the end of the season, with just everything at least going decently towards the right way. So I'm just going to agree and say, yes, we just want everyone healthy. At least the people, like you said, that we know are going to get the minutes. Someone like Frank Jackson, I feel bad, and I wanted to see him play some this season, but it's not going to be a huge contributor. So we just need those guys that we need to remain healthy.
The good news is – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying that that was always the frustration with – the last core, right, the finishing four or whatever people were calling them, right, with Tariq, Drew, Anderson, and AD. Now, granted, that group was always flawed, and it was probably never going to work in terms of any kind of championship aspirations. But I think we always had had sort of the suspicion that if they were all healthy and played a good 70 games straight together where they could figure everything out, with how all those pieces fit together, I think it could have been a fun little team. And maybe you sneak into the playoffs a couple of years, which I guess they did get at least the 1 year. But, you know, that's always been the thing with the team, that you never get to just get a glimpse of, does it work, does it not work? Because players end up, you know, 3-4 years later leaving, and we actually never really get the answer, right? Those guys actually still never played. I don't even know if that whole group I was talking about even played a full season together.
Yeah, well, the good news is Anthony Davis did have the healthiest year of his career last season. DeMarcus Cousins and Rajon Rondo are two pretty healthy guys. Rajon Rondo is somebody who's known to play through pain and play through injuries, even broken hands in certain instances. Etuan Moore has been healthy. Jordan Crawford, no signs of slippage. Even if we do lose Drew Holiday for some period of time at some point in the season, you'd have to agree that this is the best possible roster to make up for his loss. We're so loaded at guard with potential playmakers and ball handlers, somebody like an Etuan Moore or an Ian Clark being able to spell, not for long term, obviously, but for a few short weeks, sure. The main place where we can't suffer any more injuries is, I would have to think, Darius Miller, obviously, and then Cheick Diallo, because right now Cheick is in a very important spot, a guy who's at this point in time going to have to split some form of 30 minutes per game with Alexis Ajinsa in those backup 4 and 5 minutes. So Darius Miller is the number one guy I can't fathom seeing go down. But let's do some parting shots, Jamile.
Wait, Preston, sorry to interrupt. And I'm sorry I was laughing while you were talking, but the reason I was laughing was because, like, when I'm summoning the optimism, like, and I think about all the real, there are some serious positives on this team. I think people are underrating the type of jump AD can make if his ball handling and shooting gets even better, Boogie being in better shape and committed, all that's great. But then there's always that thing with the Pels where you come to the realization of what you're talking about. And when you said that the one injury that we most couldn't sustain, and obviously AD and Boogie are in a different category, but the one injury that we can't sustain is Darius Miller, right? And then discussing this team, you know, trying to discuss this team as a contender, when, you know, what other contender would tolerate a statement like that being said about them? that Darius Miller is indispensable. But who knows, man? Who knows? Maybe Darius Miller turns into our Danny Green, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, he is actually valuable. So,
well, he's going to have to. But even if, you know, he comes out there and he stinks up the court and he you know, basically gives us his own version of Hollis Thompson, we do have Etuan Moore who can slot in there. And at least you'd have to think conceivably give about 15 to 20 minutes a game there. You guys, we got to get out of here. Trevor, let's take some parting shots. Tell us what you hope to come out of training camp. Obviously, you said injuries, but we've got the preseason coming up. What are some storylines you're looking forward to hearing?
A definite three, whether it be a three-guard lineup, whether it be Darius Miller emerges, whether and this goes back to three-guard, you know, I don't know, Tony Allen, Jordan Crawford. I don't know. I would just love to know at the end of training camp that not that we're going to throw somebody in there and that's probably going to be the case come the first game, like, hey, this game we're going to start so-and-so and we'll see, which of course it'll be a rotation process throughout the season. But I would just love to hear Alvin Gentry say, this guy's shown up, this guy's earned his spot at the three, and that's if it works, this is where we're going to start from and go from there. And I would love to hear something from that. I wouldn't love to hear that anything changed. I like changes as far as I like the idea of Rondo, Holiday, insert blank here, and AD and Boogie. So if we could just find out definite who that player is, I think that would be a great, at least that would, if it, let's say it's Darius Miller, it might incite some extra optimism that we all need to say, okay, they see something in him that we don't quite know yet and we haven't quite been able to come to understand. So I would just love to hear something like that.
Jamile, before I let you go, is there a universe in which Anthony Davis can give us 10 minutes a game at the three?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a universe. I mean, how many threes in the league can guard Anthony Davis, right? Of course, the elite guys. But, you know, after you get past a few of the elite guys and maybe some of the elite defenders who are more role type players, he would give them all kinds of problems, right? You throw it out to him out there. He can post the guy up even from say 17 feet out or even from 3-point line, you know, take a dribble and then turn and post him, shoot over him, you know? So I don't know that Gentry is creative enough to employ that. And I also don't think you don't want to encourage Davis to spend that much time. You know, he can shoot from out there, and I think we should encourage him because it opens up a lot of stuff. But I don't think you want to put it in his head that, you know, now I'm some perimeter player, because with his size and athleticism, he's so much more valuable 17 feet and in.
See, something you said there kind of scared me, and I don't mean that you scare me, but something you said that was just like, you know, who can guard him at the three? And the answer is, you said it, obviously the elite guys, and that's part of the issue. We've brought that up a couple times where, like, you know, the three isn't going to be that big of a deal unless we're playing those elite teams. Well, that's fine for the regular season, and yeah, we might still probably be able to manage a playoff spot, but once we get in the playoffs, you know, how far are we going to be able to make it in the West without a decent elite wing, decent slash elite wing defender? Unless that, you know, you're just ask Tony Allen to man mark. I mean, if we come up against, I don't know, Kawhi, you know, just some other guys that can get pushed out there.
Did we just lose Trevor? Trevor, we lost you, buddy. We're going to call it right here. We're about at an hour. Thank you, Jamile, so much. Thank you to all of our listeners. Again, you can follow Jamile at JamDunn06. And Trevor mentioned his Twitter handle earlier. It's something like RichieTR something. But you guys can just search for Trevor Richie and you'll be able to find him. Make sure to go to thebirdrights.com. We've got some great new stuff. As always, Ali does a wonderful job of keeping it updated. And make sure you share, retweet. We've got a lot of stuff for you guys. Last week, we had Michael McNamara and Ralph Malbro from Saints Happy Hour and Bourbon Street Shots. We had a great pod with Ali and Kevin Berrios. We just had our first pod mailbag with Trevor and Travis Tate. And coming up this week, we're gonna go deep on a Southwest preview. We've got guys from all four SB Nation ESPN sites talking about the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, the Rockets, and the Spurs. So make sure you check that out. And thank you guys for listening. We're delighted to have you, and we're delighted to have Jamile. Jamile, any parting shots?
No, just really up, you know, upbeat going into training camp, but everybody just hope for no more injuries.
Sounds good, man. Let's go, Pels.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle. It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance. Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.